Hi, Enrique.
How are you, Bob?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Good. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright of Blogging Hands TV, and this is an episode of Worldwise. And you are Enrique Acevedo, a correspondent and anchor for you would say Univision. I would imagine most Americans know it as Univision. In any event, it's the largest Spanish language network in the United States, and I think most of our viewers are familiar with it. You also do print journalism in Mexico sometimes as well. So thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us, because there are a number of issues that are of interest both to Americans and to Mexicans. The so-called war on drugs, gun control in the United States. And I guess the thing that's probably been most recently in the news is immigration reform, which passed another hurdle in the Senate at the committee level this week. Now, I assume that, there are a fair number of Mexicans who have close relatives or close friends who are in the United States and whose legal status would be affected by immigration reform. So are Mexicans paying a lot of attention to this?
Of course, this process it's being followed with a lot of attention from Mexico. I would say out of the 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the U.S. currently, roughly 70% are from Mexican origin. So for Mexicans both here in the United States and in Mexico, immigration is an identity issue. It's a very personal issue. On the other side, the Mexican government has stayed away from the negotiation because I believe there's a feeling that you don't want to interfere with a domestic issue that, and also you don't want to seem to be dictating line for the administration, for President Obama's administration, and interfering with negotiations in Congress in that sense, or at maybe also hurting the immigration reform in public opinion by taking a stand. From an official stand, for a formal stand from Mexican government. So, even though it's important for Mexicans, because like I said, it's a personal issue, the Mexican government has done a good job staying away from it and just following the process and I guess paying close attention. That's the best they can do at this point.
And can you elaborate a little on what you mean when you say it's an identity issue?
Well, most of the 11 million undocumented workers, like I said, 70% have family ties in Mexico, and or even friends and people who they've worked with, people who know them. So, a lot of people, I would say in Mexico, most of the people know someone who has come into the United States illegally or without documents, and that's why it makes it personal. That's why it's an identity issue, because immigration is part of the identity of a lot of towns in Mexico. You see people from Michoacán, from Puebla, people from Oaxaca, entire towns that have migrated for decades now, and it's imprinted in their DNA. It's not something we feel proud about in Mexico, in a sense that we would like to give these people the right conditions so they could stay, because these people are hardworking people. They are, the best we have to offer in a lot of sense. So we're not proud of that component of our DNA, but when you talk about immigration in Mexico, it's an identity issue.
And does that mean it's in to some extent a symbolic issue? In other words, aside from the legal and economic implications, the it's taken as a reflection of the attitude of Americans toward Mexicans?
Well, I think most of the people in Mexico see this as an economic issue. They say, well, there's work on the other side of the border, well-paid work, hard work in the fields, and it's not easy money at all, but it's good dollars, and dollars buy a lot of things in Mexico. So people see immigration more as an economic issue than as a social issue. I think social it's seen more as a social issue when you analyze it, or when talking heads go in depth to talk about immigration, but people see it just as an economic equation.
And a lot of the money does get back to Mexico, right? I assume there are a number of families that are somewhat dependent on dollars coming back from relatives who have gone to the United States.
Completely. After the dollars we produce from oil in Mexico and tourism, remittances mm-hmm. from Mexicans in the United States are the most important income for our economy. So it's, yes, very important. Mm-hmm. And most of the money that they make here goes back to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And the perception in the United States is that, overwhelmingly these are manual laborers. Mm-hmm. And is that the story from Mexico's point of view, that there aren't a lot of well-educated Mexicans who are seeking to come to the United States, people with college education seeking to come to the United States and having trouble getting in, or what?
I would say percentage-wise, it should be around 80-20. 80% of the people who come here, immigrants, Mexican immigrants, are low-skilled laborers, and they end up working in agriculture or manufacturing. And mm-hmm. not only because of their current skills, but also because by being undocumented, it's hard for them to get the education and the opportunities to develop other skills or high-level skills that can allow mm-hmm. them to do other types of jobs. And that's also the case in Mexico. Most of these people come from towns in which education and the overall opportunities are not there for them to develop these kinds of skills. Mm-hmm. So some of them come here, they start out working in the fields and work their way up and develop some other types of skills and really evolve in that sense. And mm-hmm. the other 20% are students. We have now, and with a recent visit of President Obama to Mexico, more academic exchange programs are being developed. And I think that's something it's worth mentioning, because more and more you see people from Mexico coming to the United States and, getting a higher education. And sometimes they stay here. Sometimes they go back to Mexico. But it's uh-huh. happening more and more.
Mm-hmm. And is that a concern at all, that too many of them would stay in the United States? Because those kinds of workers are very much needed in Mexico.
Of course, like I said, we should be creating conditions for these people to stay in Mexico. Not only mm-hmm. that 80%, but of course the other 20%. We are well below the average in research and development for Latin America. Science in Mexico, it's, doesn't receive enough funding for me to criticize what we haven't done in the last few decades. But it is not for a young student or a PhD student that has just come out of his university. It's hard for him to go back to Mexico because there are not a lot of options. His job might not be as well paid, and the conditions of his research might have might be much more beneficial here in the United States, I would say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a general rule.
You mentioned President Obama's visit a few weeks ago to Mexico. Now, while he was there, he spoke in pretty glowing terms of recent Mexican economic development. Now, there was some speculation here that he was kind of trying to pave the way for immigration reform in the sense that, if he can send the message that that Mexico's economy is on the mend, then that suggests that there won't be so much pressure pushing immigrants toward the United States in the future, and so the opponents of immigration reform can relax because this isn't going to get out of hand and so on. Is your sense that he did somewhat overstate the recent improvement in the Mexican economy, or have things been going very well there?
Well, first of all, I wish that the opponents of immigration reform would relax a little bit. I'm with President Obama on that. Second of all, I do think he overstated the importance of how well the Mexican economy is doing and its impact on illegal immigration to the United States. I believe changes in the economy affect the flow of immigrants from Mexico to the United States, but I believe changes in the economy in the United States, not so much in Mexico. And what I mean by that is even though the Mexican economy is doing pretty well, and it's done though, mm-hmm. it's done so for the last 10 years maybe, it hasn't trickled down to the base, and that's where most of the people who immigrate from Mexico to the United States are. And you know, for the Mexican economy to provide conditions for them not to migrate to the United States, I think this I wouldn't call it a prosperous era, but this positive performance of the Mexican economy would have to trickle down to that base. On the other side, you have the United States, like, for example, during 2007 to 2010, when the economy went into recession, we saw the lowest levels of illegal immigration in the last 35 years. It even came at a point in which we had a negative. You were having more people being deported to Mexico or just leaving the United States than the people who were coming in, which is huge if you think about the tendency before that. So I think changes in the economy do impact immigration, but I would say more from the U.S., more based on what happens in the U.S. than for what happens in Mexico. Finally, I would say it's important for President Obama and President Peña Nieto to talk about the economy, because I think this is an issue in which we get along much better than we do in security issues, even in the drug war that you were referring to. So for them, it's important to build on that as opposed to talk about issues in which things are not as smooth as one would like.
Mm-hmm. Now, on that issue, the war on drugs, can you talk a little about the toll that this has taken in Mexico over, say, the last 10 years? You know, the fight between the government and the criminal organizations that run the drugs.
It really intensified in 2008 when President Calderón came into power. 2006. His strategy, his priority during his government was the fight against organized crime, the fight against these drug cartels. And, you know, people see this as a necessary step. The criticism is that institutions in Mexico, including the police, including the armed forces, weren't ready for that task, weren't ready to go out on the streets and patrol those streets, and weren't ready to perform the operation that they've been required to. So, you know, it seemed more of pertinent to first put the house in order, clean up the institutions, address corruption, reform the judicial system, work on training and equipment for police forces, and then start going all out on this war. And, you know, there's not an exact figure. There is an official number, but there's not an exact figure. People believe that between 60,000 and 80,000 people have died in Mexico in the last 6 years due to this war on drugs. Most of them criminals, but a lot of innocent lives have been lost in this process too. And, you know, it's come at a great cost, not only socially, but also economically for Mexico. Towns like Monterrey were once booming and were the example of what the best version of what a Latin American city could be, really struggled with violence for a while. They're doing better now, but even Ciudad Juarez is doing better now. But still, it was rough for quite a while in Monterrey, in other towns like Reynosa, Juarez, like I said. So, it's the strategy now is shifting. I don't believe it's in the common interest of the United States and Mexico, because during the Calderón years, you had a fight against drugs, and it was pretty much focused on stopping the drugs and fighting these organizations. Now it's more of a let's stop the violence, and you know, stopping the drugs that are going north, it's not a priority, and that's where the confrontation comes.
And is there much evidence that during this period of great violence there was much success in stopping the drugs? I mean, did the price of cocaine in America go up or anything?
I wouldn't say so. No, I mean, there might have been a time during these 6 years in which large seizures of drugs or money might have had an impact on these organizations, even the arrest of the heads of some of these cartels or their death. But those leaders were quickly replaced.
Right.
The amount of drugs going through the border is a volume game. Yeah. So
yeah,
even a large
it reminds me of the war on terror, where every few months you'll hear that they've killed the number three guy in Al Qaeda or the number two guy in Al Qaeda or finally the number one guy in Al Qaeda, but they always get replaced. So the organizations that the cartels have not really been seriously disrupted by all of this killing.
They've been disrupted.
Is that right?
They've been disrupted, but I wouldn't say seriously disrupted. That's a fair assumption.
Okay, so this new emphasis, this kind of the de-emphasis on the kind of violent confrontation of the drug cartels is coming under a new president, Enrique Peña Nieto, who's been president since December, and he, of course, represents a little bit of a pendulum swing in the Mexican system. I mean, he's from the so-called PRI party, PRI, that had governed Mexico up until, I guess, 2000 for about 70 years, had held on to the presidency. Then for 2 6-year terms, we had more conservative presidents from the PAN party. And now again, with Peña Nieto, PRI is in power. What helped the PRI regain the presidency, and was his promise of a new strategy in the war on drugs an important part of the campaign?
I think the PRI got the most help. I mean, in his path to regaining the presidency, they got the most help from the PAN. What the PAN didn't do during those 12 years, and what they did wrong, catapulted the idea of a PRI comeback, and the lack of also the lack of a common and I would say modern platform from the left that really competed in 2006 for the presidency with their candidate Andrés Manuel López Obrador. The lack of a new proposal, of a fresh idea, also helped the PRI come back. So it wasn't more of a let's vote for the best option, but let's vote for the only option for many people that believe that the PRI was the only option in real option in 2012. And people are still trying to figure out if this is more like the old PRI or if this is a new PRI. President Peña Nieto has giving us some reasons to be cautiously optimistic about how he's going about things and how he's breaking with the past and the stereotypes of the old PRI, and bypassing some structural reforms in sectors like education, finance. He's also cooking up a plan for energy reform and so on, and fighting corruption in unions like the education's, like the teachers union. Right now, one of the most powerful and influent people in Mexican politics, and also one of the most corrupt, a woman called Esther Gordillo, she's behind bars. She was the leader of the teachers union, and no one would thought that during his first 5 months, President Peña Nieto would make that decision, build that case, and act on it. So, I think we're, like I said, cautiously optimistic about what's going on in Mexico and still trying to figure out what this PRI it's all about. And we have 5 more years to see that.
Okay, so I gather in the context of education, corruption means that teachers and administrators were hired for reasons other than merit, and I guess because they funneled money back to the people who hired them. Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly. The lack of transparency, the lack of evaluation, both for students and teachers, and the quotas, the way that people would be able to apply for a job or have a position as a teacher in Mexico was all part of this corruption scheme.
Mm-hmm. And then in other sectors like energy and the economy, when you refer to reforms that would distinguish the new PRI from the old PRI, does that mean a somewhat more free market approach with less state control.
Exactly. Energy is a great example. The OPRI wouldn't allow it under any circumstance to have any type of foreign investments in Pemex, the Mexican-owned oil company, the state-owned oil company. So, and now they're thinking about, you know, shared risk in exploration and other practices, best practices that are, you know, even China and Cuba have that type of structure. So, so they're more open to a free market approach, without a doubt.
Okay. So the two parties, the PRI is, of course, the one to the left, but the new PRI is not as far to the left as the old PRI, we think.
Exactly. I would say more of a center-right.
Mm-hmm. And are we seeing, has the new policy in the war on drugs actually taken tangible effect? I mean, are fewer people dying? Has the policy actually been implemented?
Well, the government likes to think so, and it's certainly selling that idea, but it's not the case. You know, there's not a lot you can do in 6 months, and I'll give them that. And smart people are behind this strategy, people like General Naranjo, who the Colombian policeman who basically, you know, implemented the strategy that ended the Pablo Escobar years in Colombia. So, you know, 6 months is not a lot of time to give results, especially when things are so bad. But still, you know, the way things are going, you don't see a real shift in the strategy on the ground. You see it in the speeches, you see it in the political rhetoric, but you don't see it on the ground. The armed forces are still out on the streets. They just came back to Michoacán, a state where it all started back in 2006. And they're trying to help the public regain control of their towns. And you know, there are some cases in which organized crime has even cut off small cities from supplies, like food or other types of services. And that's why the Mexican army has had to go back to these towns. So the strategy, like I said, seems to be more focused on regaining public safety and you know, ending the violence than in cutting off the supply for drugs into the United States. That's where interests from both countries collide in this moment, at this moment. But in you know, from a domestic perspective, it doesn't seem to be bringing about a lot of results. You know, violent deaths haven't gone down, and the violence and the perception of violence, it's pretty much the same that it was before Peña Nieto took power.
Okay. So these drug cartels that have become so powerful in Mexico, you know, are basically financed by American money, and I guess there are two things you can imagine in America that would change that. One is the legalization of drugs. Another is just the reduction in the American appetite for drugs. You know, given that in principle, these changes in America could, you know, probably greatly improve the quality of life for many Mexicans by stripping the drug cartels of power. What is the attitude in Mexico toward the United States? I mean, if I were a Mexican, I might kind of not be altogether happy with the influence that America is in this sense having on Mexico.
That's a very good question. I think that there is a sense of shared responsibility, especially in the fight against drugs. And people think that we are a distribution channel in which drugs come in from South America and we supply them to the United States because, like you know, the U.S. is the highest consumer of illegal drugs in the world. And so an approach, the White House just shifted their approach from a public safety to a public health, a more balanced approach to fighting drugs. And so, you know, fighting consumption in the U.S. it's really important for Mexicans, of course. It's reducing the demand for these substances and the effect that can have in drug trafficking in the region. Also, like you say, legalization, the White House seems to be caught between leaders from the South pushing for a new approach, asking the United States to take a look at what's going on in their countries in terms of violence, in terms of corruption, and you know, asking the U.S. to for a new approach. And at the same time, U.S. citizens states, mm-hmm. 18 states have medical marijuana laws. 2 states have recreational marijuana laws. So the states and people are moving ahead with that new approach. This, while the federal government hasn't really changed its policy towards drugs and mm-hmm. insists that legalization isn't the way. So, you know, there's a lot that could be done in the U.S. that can help this issue throughout the region. Arms control, gun control in the U.S. is also a huge issue. You see a large amount of weapons flowing through the border and right. arming these criminal organizations that are fighting the same government that the U.S. is asking to stop substances going up north.
Yeah, because I gather in Mexico, although there is, of course, a black market for guns and guns coming largely from the United States, gun control laws are actually pretty tight in the sense that it's not easy for the average American to buy a gun legally. Is that right?
Well, for the average American, it is. For the average Mexican, it isn't.
I meant to say Mexican
Of course. It is not an easy thing for the average Mexican to buy a gun, and you have to go through some red tape to own one and keep a permit. But, you know, there's, like you said, a black market in Mexico in which you can get pretty much any type of weapon from not only the U.S., but from other places around the world. And mm-hmm. That black market has grown considerably in the last 6 years. And that's something, of course, also that worries the Mexican government and worries us all. So, like I said, gun control, especially along the border, you have hundreds of if not thousands of gun shops that operate under very little oversight and that, I insist, supply most of the weapons used by these criminal organizations.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned legalization, and kind of in a slow state-by-state way, that may be picking up momentum in the United States, drug legalization. But, of course, it's going to be about marijuana, not cocaine, at least in the foreseeable future. Is the marijuana market a big enough part of the overall drug market that would actually be significant? I mean, cocaine is, of course, much more expensive at the retail level. But is marijuana really a big part of the picture?
You know, a disruption in the marijuana market would be a, like you said previously, a serious disruption to I'm sorry about that. A serious disruption to the drug business. Around 30-40% of the income of these criminal organizations currently comes from marijuana trade. So mm-hmm. They control the black market into the United States, and a legalization would roughly, studies show, would take away around $200 billion. And $200 billion is not a shy figure. So
no.
You take a lot of manpower, a lot of corruption, power and resources, vital resources from these criminal organizations. And even though they diversified into other businesses, not only drug trade, but also human trafficking, extortion, kidnapping, and so on, marijuana is still at the center of what they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is very useful to get your perspective. In closing, let me ask you a generic question that I often ask people who are from other countries. What is the kind of stereotype in Mexico of Americans? We talked about the view in Mexico of American policy toward drugs and the degree of American responsibility for the drug problem. But leaving that aside, when Mexicans think of Americans or the typical American or American culture, what kinds of thoughts do they have?
I think both countries, in Mexico and the United States, both people are shifting away from the stereotype and focusing more on reality, I would say. You know, most of the people in Mexico don't have a positive image of the United States, just like most of the people in the United States don't have a positive image or about Mexico or Mexicans. So, mm-hmm. but that's evolving with, I think, you know, as time passes, generations are more evolved in the way they think about, you know, other people. And in this very intense relationship between Mexico and the United States, the perception of both countries and both people has evolved. And I think that's important in moving forward with a more efficient, more productive relationship. People in the United States, people in Mexico, like President Obama, for example, and that has helped the image of the United States. They like the idea of immigration reform. That has also helped. And if it actually goes through Congress and it's signed by President Obama, that would, I think, bring a good boost to American to the American image in Mexico. So it's an interesting question, and I would say that in most of the cases, it's still based on the stereotype, but it's evolving, maybe at a glacier speed, but evolving nonetheless.
Uh-huh. And what are kind of the specifics of the negative stereotype? What kinds of characteristics are attributed to Americans, or what kinds of things is it that America has done in the past that shaped the stereotype, or what?
You'd have, if you ask an average Mexican about, what do you think Americans are like, they would say, well, they're just concerned about, their economy. There's a double morale in which they don't want us to go there to work, but at the same time, they wouldn't do the work in the fields. They wouldn't do the work, the hard work in the gardens and the manufacturing sector. So there's that double morale, and there's also the perception that, gun control has gotten out of hand, or lack of has gotten out of hand in the United States, and violence and these crazy mass shootings are the rule here in the U.S. And people see that as part of the DNA of the U.S. the lack of gun control and this obsessive, sometimes one would say, need to own guns and sell them and produce them despite of what's happening in places like Newtown or Aurora, Colorado, and so on. So that's also part of the image people have, and an overall north-south kind of dynamic and view from the south. So you would find that amongst the views of average Mexicans about Americans.
Sure. So it's interesting that Mexico, for all its violence, thinks of America as a violent country. I assume that the difference is that in America the violence seems random, whereas the drug-related violence in Mexico is, tactical. I mean, people are killed for in a certain sense for a reason, however unjust it is, right? But you don't have people just kind of going crazy and shooting up theaters. Is that the difference?
Exactly. That's I couldn't have said it better. I think it's more focalized in Mexico. You have things going on in, especially for example, people in Mexico City, where you have around the metropolitan area 22 million people there. Drug-related violence is not part of their everyday lives. It's that's going on miles away in border towns like Reynosa, like Ciudad Juarez, or even not so far away like Veracruz and other towns. It's come ever close to the city, but it's not part of their everyday reality. And they do feel like that. They feel violence. It's not a permanent condition in our lifestyle, and they feel that violence is a permanent condition in the lifestyle of the average American.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time, Enrique. I really appreciate it. And maybe now I'll start tuning in to Univision, hoping to see you.
Please do, so I can keep my job. I appreciate that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll get those ratings up there for you.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Bob.
Okay. Thank you. I hope you'll have time to do it again in the future. Thanks.
Happy to.
Bye. Bye-bye.